This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io. Masters of Dispute Resolution is designed to provide those involved in the mediation process with the views and insights of the most experienced and accomplished mediators in the profession. We'll share the stories of conflict and lessons learned from mediating challenging and intriguing disputes. You'll hear stories about how conflict affected the lives of those involved in the conflict and how resolution of disputes through mediation provided them with the ability to move forward unburdened by an ongoing dispute. Through our discussions, you will gain insight in how to address and overcome difficult issues and achieve more satisfying results in mediation, whether you're a mediator, attorney, or have been or contemplate being involved in mediation. Your host is Len Levy, mediator and arbiter with ADR Services, Inc., a leading alternative dispute resolution provider. Len litigated complex cases for more than 30 years and has been a mediator since 1998, joining ADR Services on its panel of neutrals in 2008. He has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution beginning in 2014. And now your host, Len Levy.
Thank you, Daryl. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the final episode of Season 5 of Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast which will add tools to your mediation toolbox. We're brought to you by ADR Services, Inc. and the American Institute of Mediation. In each podcast episode, you're going to hear a story and have heard a story about a conflict, the impact that conflict had on the lives of the parties involved, how resolution was reached, and lessons to be taken from that conflict and its resolution. Now, many of the details of the stories you've heard and are about to hear have been modified to preserve the confidentiality essential to mediation while also conveying the essence of the conflict and its resolution. Today, we're going to be doing something just a little bit different. We're going to be starting with a story and see where that story takes us, because it's a story that has a lot in common with how we live as neighbors and those kinds of conflicts that arise just from getting by every day. And look, today, I can't even tell you. Look, we have Lee J. Berman. And Lee J. Berman is, you know, when you start talking about A-listers, you start talking about those people that look up to Lee J. Berman. Okay? So that's the level we're going through here. And Lee J. has been doing this he's been a master mediator starting in, I believe, 1993, actually. I think he received first training. He's been doing this since then. And when I say this, this that Lee J. has been doing is much more than a lot of the this that most mediators do. I mean, Lee J. has been the director of Pepperdine School of Mediating the Litigated Case Program from 2002 to 2009. The number of mediators that went through and got trained and Lee J. had an influence on, you can just imagine. And if you talk to any of the top mediators in the field, not only have they heard of Lee J., but they have usually been at least to one training or more of Lee J.'s. And so in terms of contribution to how people mediate, Lee J.'s at the top. Now, I could keep going on, but I don't think that's where we want to go today. So, Lee J., thank you for joining us.
Oh, Len, what an introduction. I'm waiting for the marching band.
I didn't even get to the almost 3,000 cases that you've done or more. I mean, that's just it's just amazing. Just amazing. So, Lee J., you've got a story today. And I think in our discussions, we're talking about starting with one that is somewhat intriguing about a quarterback and his neighbor, right? Is that the one we're starting with?
Absolutely. You know, there's so many situations where you and I have both been called in to mediate between neighbors, and sometimes they're big, sometimes they're small. But when the one of the neighbors or both of them, have a lot of money or are celebrities or something like that, then they certainly escalate quickly. And this is one where we have a quarterback that everybody who ever watched a football game will know, and a beachside property with a neighbor with a beachside property, and a dispute between the two of them that escalated like you might see on Jerry Springer. It got so bad. I believe, if I remember right, that there was litigation between them already, but it wasn't that that was the most interesting part of the escalation. The most interesting part of the escalation was the neighbor next door started shining video cameras into the windows and onto the sun deck where the quarterback's wife would sunbathe. And that made them uncomfortable enough and feel invaded enough that they put a line across, like a clothesline across their patio, and with clothespins, literally hung up movie blankets to block the video cameras. The neighbor's response was to put a stick underneath the cameras on top of their roof and lift them 3 feet higher to still look down over the moving blankets. And it was this horribly invasive, how bad can I mess with my neighbor kind of stuff. So the escalation was enough that finally their lawyers called me in as a mediator to work with them and help them. And thank goodness they had good lawyers. When to bring a mediator in, the decision at all to bring a mediator in, those vary lawyer by lawyer and client by client. And this is one where we had very good lawyers who said, let's get these people to the table and bring in somebody who can talk to them.
Now, this is not something that just, oh, hey, all of a sudden one day the guy decides to put up a camera. There's some motivation there. Well, unless he's a complete, well, okay, we won't even go there. Okay.
It does take all kinds. And yeah, it starts out small, right? It starts out with trash cans or something, and then it goes to like what you're storing underneath your house that I have to look at when I walk by. And it's little things like that where they just start, in Hebrew my father would have said, they just utz each other every chance they get. And as that escalates and grows, then everybody starts one-upping the other. As nice a people as these were, quarterbacks get where they are in life. When they become very, very successful and very, very famous, there's a competitive streak there. And even during the mediation, I was hearing about what if this doesn't get resolved, I'm going to do this. And I'm thinking, this is such a nice person. I can't imagine. And this is what we mediators have to do. We have to look behind the curtain of the anger, the built-up frustration, and threatening and protecting family and feeling threatened and all of that. And we have to look behind it. And what I heard with my mediator ears is, this person has upset me so much, I'm going to go out of character for myself. And I'm going to do things that if somebody reflected them back to me with a mirror, I would be embarrassed that I was even thinking, let alone saying out loud. But it's what we do when we're challenged and when we're scared. And not to get too psychological about it, but we know that anger is a secondary emotion. It's not a primary emotion. So when somebody's coming with anger, whether it's at us as mediator or usually, at or about the other person, we know that that anger is coming out as a response to fear or hurt. So this person wasn't hurt so much as afraid of, and protecting the family. And so the anger is what we respond with. And so what I had to do was sort of sidestep the anger and get behind it. And I think my response to that was, wow, this guy's really gotten under your skin. Right? And so we had a different kind of conversation from that moment forward. And that's how these conversations end up being different, Lynn.
It's funny when you're talking about a person who is competitive for a living. I mean, there's no way to be a passive quarterback in the NFL at that I've perceived. But if the idea is I have got to win, and that's the attitude going in, what's the response going to be from the other side?
You layer on top of that, I will not be intimidated, and nobody gets the best of me. I win every competition, right? And, then of course, those elements as they play out into, I have to protect my family, and, this is invasive, and I have to shut it down, and, all that kind of stuff. Those are all natural human reactions. But then when you, I don't mean to use this euphemistically, but then when you fold into it the competitiveness of a professional athlete at the top of their field, it's like the human reaction that you and I would still have, but on steroids, because that's what, like you said, that's what they do for a living. It's what they do really well.
Okay, so aside from raising up the camera and making the barriers higher, what was the communication between them? Something led to the lawsuit, so what's the communication?
It's funny, there wasn't much, despite the fact that these guys lived next door to each other. They didn't run into each other much. There were a couple of snarky exchanges that, somebody tried to be nice and in their own minds and felt like the other one was snarky back, and they both had the same, reflective kind of story at a different day and time. And so very quickly, because these are wealthy neighbors on, on both sides and on the other side of them and everybody on, in the neighborhood, when you're talking about a beach community, anywhere in the world, J. Paul Getty, is he the one who said they only make so much coastline or something like that? So no matter where in the world you are, the people who live on the beach itself, like whose homes are on the sand, generally have a lot of resources available to them. And so what these folks did is they immediately went to their lawyers, and one lawyer writes to the other one a cease and desist sort of a thing, and then they start pointing at encroachments, because all of the legal part of this case hinged around a staircase that was encroaching across a property line once they did a new survey. And now all of a sudden, one had leverage over the other because of this encroaching staircase, and threatened that if you don't blah blah blah, I'm going to tear down your staircase and you won't be able to get into that side of your house, and all that kind of stuff. So that's where the lawyers got involved and ratcheted it up, but not in a way that was bombastic. It was just a level of escalating threats. And there was a little bit of, you don't know who you're dealing with here, and all that kind of language and all of it. But yeah, it started out very simple. And it was, you and I talk about this over lunch. The general population in the world today doesn't have the same sense of how to communicate that you and I do, and because we study this.
The communication is changing generation to generation as well. When I first started practicing law, there would be this concept of talking to your opposing counsel and seeing if you might be able to resolve a case before you go to trial, and you could actually have a collegial conversation. And things have just evolved or devolved into ways of communicating that are less than productive. And we're going to get into that when we get back. And on the other side of this break, we're going to be talking about going into the mediation and how it's approached. And I'm with Lee J. Berman. I'm Len Levy, and we're on Masters of Dispute Resolution.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California, leveraging technology to drive resolution. ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel. comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitration, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy. My guest is Lee J. Berman. And we're talking about how people communicate. And one of the things that we see, and I've never understood, when you hear a quarterback, he's barking out orders and he's telling his team what to do. And they better darn well do it, especially if they're playing in the NFL. That approach doesn't work too well with neighbors, does it?
No, and not to fault anybody, but because, you know, there are lots of careers where people bark first. But yeah, no, it doesn't work. This particular individual was very affable, very polite, very genteel until this happened. And one of the things, you know, you and I also talk over lunch about things like the state we live in the world today, where there is so much anxiety, there's threat of war, there's, you know, ice cracking down in you know, cities, and there's, you know, inflation, and, you know, Russia and Ukraine and China and Taiwan and Hong Kong, and like all of this keeps us ratcheted up at a higher generalized level of anxiety than we were 5, 10, 15 years ago. And so the trigger that the people that you and I are working with every day, both the lawyers and their clients, the trigger is so quick and the fuse is so short that people go from, hey, how are you? Nice to meet you, to hey, barking orders. And, you know, and that's the reality of the world that we live in right now. And that's where you and I, we tend to tread lightly, trying to find that space in between where we can have a rational conversation about a really difficult issue and have people talk about their emotions rather than showing them. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's some of the coaching that we do when we have people in separate rooms, if they're going to be together in a Zoom or, you know, in person. And so trying to talk people through the difficulty that they're experiencing, because we also know that when people are in conflict, they're generally ratcheted up, you know, and wound up tighter and all that sort of thing. And some lawyers don't handle it well and get ratcheted up right there alongside of their clients rather than mm-hmm. keeping the cool professional distance and, you know, being a counselor more than a litigator. And so you and I are constantly put in a position to have to manage that and teach the folks in the rooms and demonstrate for the folks in the rooms how to keep cool and even. And Len, that's one of the things I've always respected about you. You just have this unflappable, even keel presence that people could be yelling and screaming about you and you would just smile and manage the way through it. And that's what makes us good at what we do.
One of the things that, as you're telling the story became one of invasion of privacy. It became one of anger. It became one of fear of losing something. But that's not what it really was about. We need to get to what it was really about. It's kind of like the city slickers, the one thing, you know, the curly head, the one thing. How did you get to the one thing?
You've heard me say before, one of my favorite questions to ask is, what about this is so important to you? Mm-hmm. And when somebody is ranting and raving, I'm not going to let him and he's not going to, and I'm going to show, you know, I ask them, what about this is so important to you? Mm-hmm. And in a case like this, they look at me and say, my house is still my castle. It's my home. It's my sanctuary. I travel a lot for work. I have lots of obligations. And when I come home, I need to know that I'm safe and at peace, and I don't have to have the hair on the back of my neck standing up. And when I'm away from home, I don't have to worry about my wife or my family being harassed. That's what was so important about this. So then my line of questioning follows that. And I just said, what do you need to feel more safe? And as we started breaking it down, it was like, Can I extend this wall to better protect my front door from public view, even though, the code or zoning something was restricting them from doing that before? The neighbor said at the end of this, once we finally ratcheted down all of the anger and the ego and sort of undid all of that and could start having rational conversation, the neighbor next door agreed, yeah, I'll support you building the wall. The neighbor apparently had a lot of sway with this particular jurisdiction and said, I will support you in building that wall so you have more privacy. And then they agreed to move an old staircase over so it didn't encroach as much. That, there are obviously agreements about cameras and all those other things. And they talked about building, like closing in underneath the house where the neighbor was upset at having to look at some of the things underneath the house. They said, well, we're not allowed to build, doors and storage and stuff down there. But if you'll agree and support us with the city, because our neighbor on the other side has done that, then we'd like to enclose it and we'll show you the pictures of what we're thinking of building there. And you'll see it's clean and nice looking. And, took a couple of hours of conversation. But once we got to the place where we could have those kinds of conversations, sure enough, the other neighbor said the same thing. I just want to keep using my house like I've been using it for 20 years. I just want to also feel safe in my home. And, our access to that side of our house and to be able to get to the beach and, all those sorts of things are important to us. The neighbor was saying, that staircase that you have into your house is illegal and it's against the code, and we're going to have them tear it down and you won't be able to get into your house, all that stuff, all the threats. So by the end of it, we finally turned it around and got them collaborating. And just like the old book, Getting to Yes, out of the Harvard program that you and I both read on day one of our mediation career, we got them sitting around the same side of the table, targeting the problems together rather than making each other the problem. We talked about the heightened anxiety that we all have and all of that. What that does is it makes us feel threatened by the other person. And so we take it out on the other person. And suddenly we think the other person is the problem when it's not. The problem is, I don't feel safe in my home. I need to feel safe in my home. I don't like that staircase encroaching. It's too close to my bedroom window. Let's work together to fix the problems. And it just takes, you and I have another old friend and mentor who's not with us anymore, Richard Millen. And Richard, in his Tennessee drawl, he used to say, it ain't so complicated what we do. You just take them down the bend, you make the turn, and once you make the turn, you have the good conversations. And and he made it sound so simple. But truly, right? But that's what we're doing. We're trying to get them to ratchet down enough that we can help them literally access a different part of their brains, the prefrontal cortex, where their rational, logical thought lies, instead of the emotional trigger and the amygdala that everybody's heard about. We're just trying to untrigger them, talk them off the ledge, calm them down, and then get productive in the problem solving.
The situation that you described with the quarterback and the neighbor is a living in the house kind of a problem. The problems that exist between neighbors exist in commercial situations. It's funny, what just popped into my brain was when two attorneys that were working for me at one point, when I had my law firm, couldn't agree on the setting on the thermostat. It devolved into somebody, putting glue on the thermostat cover and things of that nature. And I remember the first two words when I had them both come in, and I said, "Now, children, that was the first." It's like, to a degree, if we told people how we behaved, I'm not saying you and me exactly, but if people would convey to their friends how they behaved, just that telling might be embarrassing, totally embarrassing. So when you have a problem that has come up with neighbors, the problem that you just described is one that Once you got past the things that you needed to get past in terms of communication and defined the problem, they could agree on the solution. But there are more
Right.
challenging kinds of situations. I know that you dealt with, and I've dealt with real estate situations that involve homeowners associations, that involve
Oh, goodness.
that and one I think you told me had involved a there were office condos and do you want to convey that one?
Sure. So it was my first time running into office condos where these people, accountants and whatever their professions were, they had bought condo space in this office park, and owned it just like we own our condos at home. So normally we rent offices, right? So if something's wrong with your office, you can generally pick another office down the hall or something like that if you don't have a lot of tenant improvements in and all that stuff. But this one, they were condos, so these people were vested in the ownership of it and permanent, like trees, they had roots there, they couldn't move. And the city had approved the development of a new hotel on what had been the large empty lot that was right outside their office windows. And it had been empty for a couple of years from the time these folks bought their condo, their office condos. And then the plans got approved by the city, and we've seen them before. The sticks go up in the air, outlining the corners of where the building is going to be and all that sort of thing, so that the public hearing, the public can sort of get a visual of where it is and all of that. And these office condo owners, who, like any other condo, had an association, they sued not the developer of the hotel next door, they sued the city for wrongfully approving the plans for this hotel, claiming every encroachment they could find in the plans. But one of them was the hotel was three or four different buildings in sort of pods in this parking lot, the way it was arranged. And one of the buildings was only 8 feet from the property line, which is what the setback laws allowed, but it was going to be three or four stories tall. And the condo office building next door was only 2 stories tall. So it was going to block all the daylight and sunlight from the windows of these folks who'd been staring out at this open field for the first 2, 3 years that they own their condos there. So now the city gets sued. They have to turn around and bring the developer into the case who's building the hotel. And now there's a three-way lawsuit. We have three sets of lawyers. And the city's in the middle because they're being sued by the office condo folks. They're suing the developers of the hotel. And all of this is going on. And the city comes to me when I was brought in to mediate it and says, please just fix this. Like, we need the hotel. We need the revenues. We want the neighbors to be happy. Everything is, legal and legitimate as we look at it again and again. Our planners have looked at it and everything else. And it's truly fine. But the neighbors are unhappy, and we need this litigation to go away. We don't like the press, we don't like the expense, and we certainly don't want this project delayed, while it winds its way through the courts. That's not where it belongs. And I said, of course, I totally understand. So I now have a mediation where I'm sitting down with the handful of the most angry of the office condo folks who have the authority to agree on behalf of that association. They're the officers. And then I've got the developer. And I said to the developer, have your planner and your architect available by phone in case we need them. And that's how that one teed up. That's how that started.
Okay, well, we're going to get into that, and we're going to get into some of the similarities between those neighbors and the quarterback. There are some elements there that I think we can probably get into. So we'll be back right after this break. I'm Len Levy. We're a Masters of Dispute Resolution, speaking with Lee J. Berman.
Hi there, we hope you're enjoying another fascinating episode of Masters of Dispute Resolution. Has the show ever made you think about becoming a mediator and doing the work you're hearing these experts doing? Are you thinking about it right now? Imagine a career where you're working to help people in conflict find win-win solutions. The sense of purpose you'll feel can easily be heard in the voices of the guests on this show and its host, expert mediator Len Levy. or maybe you're a mediator already looking to build your skill set in order to pull off some of the brilliant and out-of-the-box solutions that these guests are talking about. That's where we come in. We're the American Institute of Mediation, and we train mediators of all levels. We're the place you come to learn the basics of mediation or to raise your game in the field. We specialize in mediating commercial and litigated cases, but we teach the skills in such a way that will work in any setting. Our slogan is world-class training for the complete mediator, because we feature the world's best mediation trainers and we prepare you for all aspects of being a professional mediator. Find us online at AmericanInstituteOfMediation.com and browse all of our courses that are available for streaming on demand. You can watch our courses at your convenience, at your desk, on a plane, or in bed in your jammies. We'll see you in the mediation world soon.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, chatting with Lee J. Berman about things that are neighborly and things that are not quite so neighborly. How we get communication going between neighbors. So Lee J., we've got an office condo group that's feeling like things are being taken away from them. Can you get into that just a bit?
Absolutely, Len. And you said it perfectly. You and I both know that there have been enough studies that now tell us that in human nature, the way the brain works, we respond more strongly to loss aversion than potential for gain. So having something taken from us that we feel like is ours is a much bigger deal to us than, you know, winning the lottery or something like that. It doesn't seem like it should be, but it is, because we're creatures of comfort and habit and all of that. So yeah, these folks had their office condos 2-3 years, and I could be wrong, as I think back now, it might have been more like 5-7 years. Mm-hmm. But they'd been looking out over this open space. They had daylight out their windows every day, and no traffic and congestion and everything, and they got used to it. And even though, you know, they had to know that it was a big vacant lot in the middle of a beach city again, they had to know it was going to be developed at some point, but that the brain doesn't register that. The brain doesn't say, I better enjoy my view today because it could be gone tomorrow. It just reacts with shock when it's suddenly gone. Mm-hmm. So they came to this mediation with their hair on fire, not because somebody had done something to them, but because of the fear that, you know, they just laid out a good amount of money to buy these office condos, and now they were liable to start to feel like they were in a cave with a wall right outside their window and, you know, all that sort of thing. So the way they described it, it was with such desperation. It was as though somebody had done this to them intentionally and criminally, and, you know, they were going to stop it. It was, as you said before the break, it was much the same kind of heat that the quarterback had, feeling threatened and somebody invaded their space. And, some of it, to a degree, with this situation, was sort of like who moved my cheese. You know, there was just change and they didn't like it. And like, you know, angry children, they were stomping their feet. And yet, if I were one of those people and, you know, I was looking out my condo office window for years, and all of a sudden there was a building about to go up that was going to block it entirely, and I was going to be staring at a wall, I'd be pretty upset too. Partly at myself for not understanding that it was going to happen. They really went at the city because they saw that as the place where there was vulnerability and where they thought they had some leverage. So they went at the city manager and the city planners with pitchforks and torches. I mean, they acted like these people should have been, you know, hung in public or flogged or something like that, because how dare they allow this to happen?
I was just going to interrupt just to say their perception of where they have leverage comes from a political point of view or from a legal point of view. Where are they getting this?
We have a law in California, the California Environmental Quality Act, mm-hmm. that requires cities to require would-be developers to file certain environmental impact reports and other things like that. And, you know, as I'm saying this, I should footnote that some of these laws are changing as we speak, and some of these are going away. Mm-hmm. And there are exceptions being made in large scale by some of the cities when they build these stadiums. When the Clippers built their arena and when they built the stadium the Rams and Chargers play in, they waived those requirements, the local city did, and they got sued too. So there is a relaxing of that now. But when this was in place, the city had a legal duty to require those studies to be completed, to have public hearings where the public could read the studies and then, sound off at public hearings about the traffic or the noise or the sight lines or anything else that they wanted to complain about. And so the suit against the city was to say, you didn't adequately review those studies and the impact of them, or you didn't hold enough. The problem is the legal remedy to that is nothing more than a delay. At the worst case, the city doesn't have financial liability to them or anything. They just go back to square one and say, okay, developer, you're going to have to go do these studies and we'll have more public hearings. And, eventually most of those projects still get built the same way. That was their point of leverage because they had no privity with the neighbor next door. There was no violation they could point to, that, and certainly no tort or act of aggression or anything that the hotel had committed. So the nice thing is the developer was also the hotel owner operator, which is really unusual. But in this case, it was a smaller hotel chain, and that's how they proceeded. They bought the properties and developed them themselves. And their business was the hotel business, but also real estate and development. So I guess you could say they were vertically integrated in that sense. So we had the people at the table who were going to be owning and operating the hotel. So because I'd made sure they brought all their plans with them and everything else, and the hotel developer actually brought their planner to the mediation with them. He was on their staff. He wasn't a consultant, so they just brought him. So we laid everything out, and I had the homeowners, sorry, the office condo owners show me where their building was and where their windows were and where their view was and what part of it was so important to them. And I'm scratching my head and I'm looking at the plans and I'm looking at the planner and I'm looking at, I mean, I've got enough background and experience with real estate development, having worked for a couple of big home builders, one of whom was master plan community builder. And so I learned a lot when I was there. And I'm looking at the driveway and it's excessively wide, almost palatial. It was this big loop that sort of came in and looped around by the front door, but it was meant to look, luxurious in its width. And I said to the planner, what is the required width that the fire department needs to come turn their engines around in here? Because that's usually the determinant of what the minimum width is. And he said it's 22 feet or something, and we measured it, and there was plenty of room to spare. And I said to the planner, is something like this possible? If we take this building, the one that's right outside the windows of the office condos, and we move this building to the right, how far could we move it before we be encroaching in the fire department's, width requirement for the road? And he measures and comes back and says, we could move it 8 feet. I said, you could move this building 8 feet over and give these people more space and more daylight and everything else. And he says, yeah, it would certainly impact the entry and the sort of marketing window as you pull into the front of the hotel. But he said, it's really just aesthetic. In any other way, planning wise, we could certainly make that move. And he looks at his boss, who's the developer, and the boss shrugs like, if that's what it's going to take. And so I, go to the homeowners and say, if they moved this building 8 feet over, the one that's right outside your windows, is that enough? That's as far as they can move it without, I mean, literally they can't go any further or they'll be impeding into the drive. But if they did this for you, would that make this better for you? And they said, yes, that would be a really nice thing to do. They said, but we are concerned about the noise and da 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 da, and they went on about other things. So I went back to the hotel developer and said, is there anything else you can do for them? Maybe non-economic, but anything at your disposal that you can do to make them happier, to be a better neighbor. They're really happy with the building being moved. They're grateful that you're willing to do that. And frankly, so am I. That's amazing. And anything else you can do to help put a bow on this that will make them feel valued because their biggest frustration right now is that they've been arguing this for 2 years and they didn't feel heard, and they had to file this litigation and blah, blah, blah. And he said, I'll tell you what, tell them we will give them, because they're owners and they're not tenants, so they will be the ones that own it. For the time that each of them owns their office condo, we will give them key cards and access to our spa, our pool and jacuzzi, our weight room and gym and rec center. We're going to build a beautiful one here. You can take these plans in and show them what it's going to look like. It doesn't pass to their next owner when they sell their office condo, but as long as these individuals are there, we will give them this access to our facilities 24/7, until they sell their unit. And I looked at him again and said, that's fantastic. It's creative. You and I think, oh, we come up with all these creative resolutions and mediation, but so often it's the people who are in the middle of the dispute who actually have the answers, right? They come up with all
That's right.
the really sexy creative stuff. So I go back to the homeowners and they're like, oh, they would do that for us? That's so cool. Oh my God, love you. They wanted to go in the next room and like hug them and all this. And so, we moved the building 8 feet, which was a pretty big deal. Because obviously it affects water, sewer, and everything else, but they hadn't broken ground yet, so that was still doable. And they gave them, like, they made them feel welcome on the property. Not like this big bad property was now encroaching right outside their window, but that they felt a sense of belonging and ownership and neighborliness. And all we had to do, Len, was change the discussion, right? Because it started out about right and entitlement and remedies under the law. And it was, we think we can defend this under CEQA. We don't think that a court's going to make us go back and start over. But even if we do, at the most, it's 18 months delay. We think it's more like 10 to 12 months delay. And that would upset the developer and the city because the city wants the revenues from the tax base. But, if that's what we have to do, that's what we have to do. But you're not going to stop us. And, they said, well, we'll find another way and we'll picket and boycott, because just like the first story, it was ratcheting up and getting more and more heated and more threats. And all we had to do was intercede in there, figure out what about the transgression was bothering them so much,
Right.
and then start asking questions about what we could do to fix it. So, it's funny. I love that you call the show Masters of Dispute Resolution, and I'm always flattered to be included under that umbrella. And yet, truly, if we just listen and ask good questions and let people tell us what's going on, that's three quarters of the battle right there.
You know something, the listening. I remember first trainings and talking about active listening, and the real active listening is to hear the people's needs, not just what they are demanding, but what they really need. In this particular instance, owners of the condos didn't know. They could not have been the ones coming up with the idea of the use of the spa and the use of all. So what was done was that you enabled both parties to really hear each other, to focus on needs, and to change a future of, well, we're gonna go head to head on this, and we're gonna fight you on this, and we're gonna fight you on that, to, wow, we're really looking forward to using that gym. That sounds cool. Okay,
And
so
we feel like we belong. It's like if some neighbor knocks on the next door neighbor's door, bang, 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 and is upset about something. The neighbor who answers the door can either say, "What's your problem?" or can say, "Man, you look upset. Come on in, sit down. Can I get you a glass of iced tea or a beer?" How we respond in that moment is all the difference in the world. And what you're saying about the listening, it's listening to the needs, and this is going to sound really childish, but it's the visual that pops into my childish brain when I think of it. I think of like Roadrunner and Coyote, and the coyote is throwing everything in the world at the Roadrunner, and the roadrunner is ducking behind a rock, behind a big boulder. And the roadrunner reaches up and grabs a frying pan as it flies by, and grabs a side of ham, and grabs a couple of eggs, and makes breakfast while the anvil and the hammer and everything else are flying by. That's what we do. Like, all these insults and these threats and all this stuff goes flying by us in this barrage from people all day long. And our job is to go, oh, that was interesting. That kernel right there. Ooh, that little bit of information, I want to ask more about that. Mm-hmm. Oh, I could use that one later. Let me bring that back up to them later. And that we're being selective in picking out the parts of that barrage. I love when people say, I'm going to kill him in trial. This is $1 million case. They're going to owe me so much money. If I don't get $1 million or something like that, then I'm just going to. Right. And all I hear is, or something like that.
Right.
The rest just goes right by.
We are going to go one more segment because I want to get into this a bit more. There's some really useful things that we can talk about. Well, welcome to our final segment of this episode of Masters of Dispute Resolution. We're talking about things that are neighborly and maybe not so neighborly. And Lee J. Berman and I have been talking about how the communication has changed, how the communication was changed in the mediation that Lee J. just described. So the question that I have is, what can we tell everyone to look for? And what are the opportunities to change that the dialogue to something that's productive?
So the model that I've actually broken out in mediations at times, when I'm having longer mediations with business partners or with, I just came back from 4 days of mediation around a family business. Mm-hmm. The first thing that I've done with them in those situations where it's going to be lots of communication over multiple days is I review with them a model you'll be familiar with, the Thomas Kilman instrument, mm-hmm. that talks about how people respond to stress and conflict, mm-hmm. and helping them understand how those reactions affect relationships. So we have a habit that if an issue is important to us, human nature is you immediately start competing with the other person, you know, if they're pro or anti-Trump or anything else in our today's world, we start competing as soon as we think somebody has the wrong side of an argument or doesn't understand an issue or something. And the competing is where all this ratcheting up comes from. Competing says to the other person, whether we intend for it to say this or not, it says to the other person, you're not important to me. This issue is more important. And so one of the things we have to decide, I saw a cute meme on Facebook, one of my friends put up, or Instagram or somewhere this morning, saying, be nice to others without needing a reason to be. And I think as we go through life, if each one of us can think about being a little bit more relational with other people rather than transactional, rather than you have to cut that tree down because it's, you know, leaning over my wall on my property, how about going to them and figuring out how can I use, and this is going to sound odd to people who don't do what you and I do, but it's actually possible to go to people and say, how can I have a discussion with my neighbor about the tree where at the end of the discussion we come out knowing each other better and even better friends and neighbors than we are now? If relationship is the goal, not the transaction, mm-hmm. then the transaction gets talked about and done in a different way. And so, you know, you talked early in this episode, Len, about lawyers who back in the day would go have a tuna fish sandwich and a cup of coffee in a diner and sit across the table from each other and try and figure out how to help their client solve the problem. Rather than, you know, banging the table and saying, we're going to crush you with this motion and, you know, that kind of rhetoric. I think the way they did that back then was saying, what's important to your client? And let me tell you what's important to my client. But with the neighbor situation, it really is about saying, hey, Your tree's gorgeous. I really love it. And I don't want to do anything. I don't want you to do anything that's going to hurt it or harm it. But I'm having a problem. Let me tell you what the problem is. And I want to work with you in any way that we can together. And notice the language. We, us, let's, together, ours. The way we frame a problem, if we frame it as ours and let's figure out together how we can do something that'll make it quit leaning against my wall or dropping debris over my side or, whatever. The solution can be as simple as the neighbor whose side the tree is on can say, "How about this? My gardener comes every other Wednesday. How about you give him access to your backyard and I'll make sure he goes over there and, cleans up all the droppings during the spring and the fall from our tree." And the neighbor says, "Would you really do that? That's so kind." And the neighbor says, "I'd be happy to split the cost with you." And now we're problem solving productively because having a good relationship with that neighbor and wanting to have a neighbor who's a friend drove the conversation so that people collaborated around a problem. Let me tell you my side of it. Let me hear your side of it. We talked about listening before the last break. And let's figure out together how we can fix this. And instantly, people are solving a problem, and trees aren't getting cut down, and walls aren't getting built higher and higher, and all this kind of escalation stuff that happens. And I need to say it this way, Len. That's the stuff that happens when people just don't know what to do when they're faced with a problem. And so they just immediately go to competing. They go to war. They go to threats. They go to, cameras in the window and, all the stuff to intimidate people. And it's just so counterproductive. But, shows like yours help teach people these kinds of skills. I mean, everybody who's listened to this episode is going to walk away with more information about what to do the next time than they had before this episode. And that's one of the beautiful things I love about your show.
Well, thank you. But one of the aspects of doing what you've described is it's having a vision of what you want the world to look like when the dispute is over. And having that vision and trying to create that vision in people's minds, say, to get them to describe, okay, look, you've got this now the situation where he's raising up the cameras and you're raising up this, and you're afraid to look at him as you walk out the door, and he's afraid to look at you, and it's an unpleasant angst you get when you're dealing with someone like that. And then you say, wait a minute, what do you mean someone like that? That's my neighbor. That's someone that I have an opportunity. We have an opportunity to help each other get what we both want. And that's the thing. We have become a very self-centered society. My rights, what I'm entitled to, the sense of entitlement. The fact of the matter is that everyone has a right to exist and pursue happiness. And what enriches that is having pleasant conversations. And that's
Absolutely. So,
kind of what we're all about.
yep, exactly. So, you said everybody is very self-centered, and I agree with you. You can just tell driving down the freeways in Southern California that everybody is, "I'm coming over, get out of my way." It is a very self-centeredness, but there's another piece to it, and I don't know. This comes from some of my Zen studies, maybe, but everybody's also walking around with this sense of separateness. There's me, and then there's everybody else, and they're separate from me, rather than my neighbor is a part of my ecosystem and my environment here. And so, to take what you were saying about the anxiety that we hold, you don't want to look at the neighbor when you walk out the front door. I'm going to ratchet it up from there, Len. I think it's more than that. I think you're lying on the sofa with your arm around your wife, watching a movie and you hear a loud noise outside, and the mind immediately goes to, oh my God, what's he done now? Right? Because it's, we don't actually put it away. We're accustomed now, we're used to keeping that level of anxiety right there next to us, where it's close and it's accessible. And as soon as something happens unexpected, we immediately think, oh, it's that guy next door, he's done something else now. Right? And so we walk around holding that. It's more than just, the angst of the moment of walking out the front door. I think it's with us all the time. And the wife calls in the middle of the afternoon and she sounds a little hysterical. Immediately my mind goes to, what did that guy do next door now? Right? And then I have to wait and listen and hear, oh, okay, no, it's not that. Something happened with one of the kids or something. But we hold it right there and we underestimate the impact of that on us. But your other point about people not thinking about the outcome of the things that they're saying and talking about. Everybody gets triggered, they get mercurial, they get heated, excited, they explode like a rocket. And then they come back and say, oh, I'm going to do this and this and this and this. And the benefit that you and I have, because we're not in the dispute, because we're unattached from it, we're not detached. I mean, we're not completely like checked out and don't care, but we're unattached from it so that we're not dragged down into it with them. We keep the separateness that I'm talking about because that's a professional distance we keep. And it allows us to say, great, you're going to take him to trial, you're going to kill him, you're going to get $1 million, then what? And people almost always go, oh. And we can start talking to them about, you have a judgment against somebody and do they have any assets or are they going to go bankrupt? And there's that. Or, great, you sue your neighbor and you get the tree cut down because it's encroaching and blah, blah, blah. And now what? Because the neighbor then is going to find some violation on your house and report you to the city, or they're going to start parking where they partially block your driveway. Like the escalation of winning over somebody just continues to make them want to win back over you. And what you and I are saying, I think, is that our goal instead is to figure out a way to win people over rather than winning over them. If we can win them over with kindness and working together with them and valuing the relationship, I'm a firm believer, because I've seen it for 30 years, that people coming out the other side of a conversation that they went into with curiosity rather than bombacity or, well, fighting effectively. When people go in as advocates to make a point, they're not really listening. But if you go in with curiosity, you come out the other end having learned more about the other person. And I've seen partnerships get better. I've seen marriages get better. I've seen business deals get better because they learned through this process that there are even more ways they can collaborate and make more money and all those sorts of things. But not if they're, I'm going to do this to you, and advocating with a steel fist.
Lee J, I couldn't have said it any better. The phrase that popped into my mind is from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which is be excellent to each other. Be excellent to each other. And that is what
Yes.
I hope we can help foster by having these kinds of conversations. And so, Lee J, thank you once again for all of your support, for your friendship, for participating in this. And we're putting our heads together on some on our sixth season coming up, and I'm looking forward to that. So, thank you. And in the meantime, Lee J, how can people best get a hold of you to either book you for mediation or training or anything?
So, I've got this double Southern name that's a combination of my first and middle because my mother, Bobby Sue, gave it to me. So it's LEEJAY. It's actually my first and my middle together. So it's just Lee J at Lee J Berman, BERMAN.com. It's easy.
Well, thank you, Daryl Wayne. my engineer and producer, and I'm your host, Len Levy. This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io, powered by Infogen Labs, Inc. I hope you continue to enjoy the stories we bring you, and in the meantime, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com, telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.